I could see from the comments that I got yesterday after I spoke that maybe it wasn't really 100% clear by the end where we were standing. So I want to review and make sure that the bottom line is clear. If you have any questions about it, I'll be glad to try to answer them and then go on to something else. When we're thinking about emotions, you could imagine two extreme positions. And I want to say the truth is in the middle someplace. So let me describe the extreme positions, and these are the ones that are going to be rejected. One position is that I have the feelings I have, and that's just the way I am, and there's no way of even talking about the feeling being right or wrong, good or bad, correct or incorrect, valid or invalid. You know, it's like the color of the table or the color of my eyes. It's just who I am and what I feel. So that means everything goes. There's no critique. Whatever you feel is okay because that's what you feel. That's one extreme position. And it's wrong. And I showed you because many feelings are supposed to help you relate to the world in a good way, in a useful way. And if you have a feeling and the world isn't that way, you're out of touch. Like being afraid when there's no danger, or being in love with somebody who's just trying to trash you. The whole point of the feeling is to help you deal with the world in a good way, and if the world is not the way the feeling should have it, then the feeling is going to kill you. So surely those feelings could be criticized. So we don't want to say that every feeling is okay and there's no such thing as right or wrong or better or worse or valid or invalid. That's not correct. The other extreme is where you look at the feeling, you look at the world, and you measure and say, does it fit or doesn't it fit? And whenever the feeling doesn't fit the world, obliterate the feeling. Change the feeling because it's out of touch with the world. That would seem the natural thing to do. Once you realize that your feelings can be out of touch with the world, and the world is in the driver's seat, you know, the world is what it is. You either fit in or you lose. So the natural thing to do would be go to the opposite extreme and say, take a look at the world, check your feelings, and if your feelings are out of step, change them. But that's not right either. That was what I took to be the surprise yesterday. It certainly was a surprise to me when I discovered it. I was really shocked. There are times when the Torah tells you, yes, your feeling is out of touch with the reality, but it's a good feeling to have anyway. It's a good feeling to have anyway, and we should accept it, and we could even make a blessing on it, even though the feeling is out of touch with reality. When does that happen? So the type I gave you yesterday was this. When the feeling is caused by the present, what's going on right now. I told you, feelings are linked to the present. Feelings are determined by what you're experiencing at the moment. The farther away you get from something, the less feeling you have for it. But the reality isn't all at the same time. The reality is going to go along for a while. And could be mentally, intellectually, you make a calculation and you say, you know, taking the long run into account, the real world is X. My feeling, because it's stuck in the present, I'm not feeling the right thing for X. I'm feeling something else. So I can see mentally that here's my feeling, stuck in the present, and there's the long run, and it doesn't correspond. So if I have something that's bad now, but in the end will have good consequences, and I feel terrible, I feel devastated, I feel hurt, I feel betrayed, And my mind tells me, but look, 3 years from now, it's going to be great. So that's where the mind is one thing, and the heart is another thing. Your thinking is one thing, your feeling is another thing, and your feeling will not come along with your thinking. Because feelings are determined by what you're experiencing at the moment.
What's and attached to your heart, that you attach the feelings also?
If you what?
If you attach your head to your heart.
No, I'm saying that's not possible. That's not possible. Feelings don't work like that. When you'll be excited in January about summer vacation, as excited as you are in May, then we'll talk. In the meantime, I doubt very much, even though you think about it, but the heart just doesn't respond. You know, it's 5 months from now. So, here's a case where my mind tells me that the reality, including the future, will be good. And in my heart, I'm devastated. I'm hurt. I'm in pain. I feel terrible because I see what's in front of me. Now, if I took the second extreme, I ought to say, well, here's the real world. Here's my feeling. My feeling's out of step. So, blast it. Get rid of the feeling. It's out of step. The Torah doesn't do that. Indeed, the Torah tells you to make a blessing on it. Make a blessing on that feeling that's out of step. So here we are, where we know it's out of step with the world, and even so we accept it. And if you make a blessing on it, it means that it's right. It's appropriate to have that feeling. So where are we left? We're left in between the two extremes. You don't accept all the feelings you have. And you don't reject all the feelings that are out of step with the world. How do I know on any particular occasion how I'm supposed to feel? I have to look up the rules for that particular occasion. There are rules. There are rules about how you're supposed to feel about things. But it isn't this blanket rule, which is what I call the second extreme, that look at the world, and if you're out of step with the world, blast the feeling. That rule is not the right rule. It doesn't mean there are no rules, just not that rule. That rule is too extreme. That rule is too extreme. If you need to know how you should feel about a particular thing, you have to look up how that particular thing is described in the Torah or in the tradition somewhere and find out what the appropriate feelings are for it. So that's where we end up. We end up with the idea that feelings do have rules, but not that one blanket rule. If it's out of step with reality, then blast it. And then you have to look up each particular case. Yeah.
Are you saying it's better almost to have, we make a blessing on the feeling because at least we're having a feeling, right? We should be thankful that we're even having a feeling that we should make a blessing on.
No, because there can be times when you have wrong feelings. And then you won't make blessings on those feelings. I'm just talking about these particular feelings. Feelings where what's happening to you now gives you a feeling, and your mind says, but in the long run it's going to be very different.
When you make a blessing on disorientation, though, because you're not at level with who you're trying to be, at least. Maybe.
No, this isn't disorientation. Here is a very positive, definite orientation, but I know in my mind, when I take the long run into account, it's wrong orientation.
You're almost like shooting at least 1 foot in the process, it seems.
Okay, so this is what I said at the very end. I didn't have a chance to really elaborate. What we're facing here is a fundamental difference between the mind and the emotions. This is what I hinted at the end. When I tell you that the emotions are stuck in the present, the emotions are stuck here and now. What's going to happen 6 months from now does not stimulate great emotion. As you get closer and closer to it, the emotions get stronger and stronger. What happens 8,000 miles from here doesn't stimulate nearly as much emotion as what happens around the corner. That's the way the emotions are. They're stuck in the here and now. That's very much like the body. Your body is here and now. Your body isn't next door. Your body isn't 8,000 miles from here. And your body isn't 20 years from now. Now, anyway. Right? Any identification of the body is in a particular place at a particular time. So the limitations of the emotions are like the limitations of the body. You're stuck in a particular place at a particular time. The mind isn't like that at all. The mind is not limited in space and time. As I told you, to think about the other side of the moon, or to think about Jupiter, or to think about Alpha Centauri, light years from here, and to think about 100 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, or 5,000 years ago, is nothing. There's no effort involved. No strain. The farther away you get, the harder it is to think. Ridiculous. The mind doesn't recognize those limitations of time and space. The mind can move from one time to another, or one space to another, instantaneously, without any effort at all. So here you have a tremendous difference between the mind, which acts above and beyond time and space, versus the feelings, which are really stuck in time and space. So because they are so different, we should expect that there will be conflicts between them. They operate in very different ways. Now, to reject the emotions that disagree with the mind would be like saying, I'm rejecting the fact that I have a body. The body's too limited, I want to live in my mind without the body. That's a mistake. Jewishly, that's a mistake. A person is a soul and a body working together. And when the emotions express the legitimate viewpoint of the body, even if they don't match up with what the mind sees, because the mind sees more, even so, from the point of view of the body, the response is legitimate, and therefore we don't change it. We don't change it, we don't obliterate it. Just for those who remember this, when I said it before, but I'll give you just a little parallel. When the angel said that King Menashe should not come to heaven, even though he did tshuva, and they set up roadblocks on all the paths to heaven, and the Gemara tells us that God dug a tunnel, an underground tunnel, and brought him up. Why did God bring dig a tunnel? If the angels are wrong, if Menashe should come to heaven, why didn't he just obliterate their roadblocks and take him up the royal road? The answer is that the angels were not wrong. The angels saw he can't come up this way, and he can't come up this way, and he can't come up that way, and they were correct. But they were too limited. What the angels saw, they saw correctly. But the vision was too limited. So God said, all the roads you blocked, you're right, they're blocked. They're not appropriate for him to come up. But come up altogether? Sure he should come up. Another way, a way that you don't know. A way that's beyond your scope of vision. So it's not that they got it wrong, it's just that they couldn't see everything. Similarly with the emotions. The emotions aren't getting it wrong. It's just that the emotions are responding to a little slice of the world. But that's what they're designed to do. That's what the body lives. The body lives slices. That's all it's got. The senses respond to slices. The hands can manipulate slices. The mind is unlimited that way. Nope. If so, when the mind and the emotions disagree, it's not appropriate to obliterate those emotions, because those emotions express a legitimate point of view, just limited. And that point of view is real. It's part of who you are, and it shouldn't be obliterated. It should be given its mode of expression, and then, because you're a person with a mind also, you use the mind to guide how you deal with the world. Yeah.
What about in terms of Judaism? What about when you have a emotion that is contrary to Yiddish life? Is one, quote unquote, makuyim to get rid of that emotion?
Yes. Yes. There are times when the emotions are wrong. And when the emotions are wrong, then indeed you have to work to get rid of it. Correct.
If you, for instance, love someone you're not allowed to marry, someone who doesn't get married, you have to get rid of that emotion.
That's right. That's right. And there are techniques for working on your emotions and changing them. Right?
So there are times.
Yes, that's what I say. There are rules, just not this one blanket extreme rule.
What's wrong with the blanket?
What's wrong with the blanket extreme rule?
It's wrong.
What?
If the emotion is wrong, then it's wrong.
Well, but it isn't wrong.
The same way where when it gets the Torah, you're told to do the Shabbat, which means that you could uproot your emotions.
That's right.
Now, yes, you uproot your emotions, then every time your emotions are wrong, you Shabbat.
Correct. But what makes it wrong? being
if
out
your
of
head says it's wrong, and you tell somebody your head says it's wrong, then it's wrong.
Well, let's maybe the head needs some instruction. Maybe the head's making a mistake.
Who do you trust more, your head or your emotions, your head or your heart?
Well, you know, that's sort of like saying, who do I trust more, Sharon or Mitzna? I don't trust either of them. I don't trust either of them, right? I trust what the Torah tells me. Now, if my head says this is wrong and the Torah says it's okay, then my head is making a mistake.
The Torah doesn't say it's okay.
It tells you to make a bracha on it. Where are we starting from? Let's go back to
the rules. Once you already have the emotion, okay, fine. Once you have the emotion, it's there. Once the emotion's already there, you can't do anything about it. It's there already. But you can prevent it, or you could make your mind, and next thing happens, the emotion will come.
But if
the emotion's already there, Torah tells you to make a bracha because it's already there already.
No, my pitom. If you are honest doing something that's wrong, the Torah's not going to tell you to make a bracha on it.
Because once already there, it's there already.
So what? If it's wrong to have it, the Torah won't tell you to make a bracha on it. The mere fact that you can't avoid doing something wrong doesn't make it right.
Are you allowed to make a bracha on a bad emotion?
An emotion that you're not supposed to have? Of course not.
So, they're not supposed to have. You're not supposed to have them. What does it mean, you're not supposed to have?
The Torah has a rule saying that...
You're not supposed to have it.
I'm telling you what it means. It means that the Torah has a rule saying don't have this emotion.
So you shouldn't have emotion. They're required to uproot it.
Correct. But only because the Torah has a rule saying don't have this emotion. Now my point is, when the emotion is out of touch with the reality that the mind sees, the Torah has no such rule. The Torah doesn't say you have to obliterate those emotions. On the contrary, it says make a brach on those emotions. So that's not a Torah rule. It may be an intuitive, logical rule, but it's not a Torah rule. That's why I said I was so surprised when I discovered this. Because I'm a logician, you see. And I'd have been much happier. I'd have been much happier if the Torah would have given its stamp of approval on logic and said, yeah, when the logic doesn't like it, get rid of it. I'd have been much happier, but the Torah doesn't say that. Yeah.
Did you say that the further you get away from something, the less of emotion is attached to it?
Yeah.
So, does that go for physical distance as far as time?
Right.
So, saying that, would it make sense to say that if this is what that statement just said, the further away you get from somebody you love, the less feeling you'll have for that person?
What did I say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder of someone else. That's what they say. Yes, the longer you are separated from something, well, over there you're hoping to get back. That may be different. But think of an event when it happens. And think as time goes on and you get further and further away in time from that event. Doesn't the feeling fade?
I'm talking about loved ones.
Yeah, but there, you're not talking about just getting further away. You're also hoping to get back. But let's take, God forbid, when someone dies. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the pain fade as time goes on?
Okay.
It fades because you're getting further and further away.
Let's go the other way. Let's say that somebody's got a grudge towards somebody. There are people that have had grudges for 50 years against somebody.
Again, that's not getting further away. That's where you are hoping to get close. You're talking about a plan to do something. We're not talking about that. I'm talking about just a question of distance. But
it happens, and then time goes on.
The vast majority of people, when A crosses B, when A injures B,
yeah,
and B forms a desire to get revenge, for most people, that desire for revenge fades over time. Yes. After a while, it becomes less and less pressing, less and less painful, less and less hurtful. Yes, it does fade.
And what about the few isolated cases where people just can't give up with grudge?
Again, there it's not a pure case. Let's imagine the case where A wrongs B, A does something terrible to B, and then A dies. Now what will happen with B? He'll still feel bad 20 years later? Still have the grudge going 20 years later? No, what echoes him is that A is still walking around, A is still successful, A is still happy, and he suffered that terrible indignity. So it's not just a question of distance from the event. He's getting a continuous stimulus that makes him feel bad. If you make it just pure distance, don't keep a new stimulus going. Make it pure distance. So cut out the stimulus. A injures B and then A dies. Is B going to nurse the grudge for 20 years? I don't think so. Once A's gone, it'll fade. Because it gets further and further away.
Hey, real quick, just to recap what you said about when you're far away from loved ones, both in distance and in time, the fact that you'll eventually get back,
What do you say?
Look, you're hoping to get back. You're losing time. This leg, you're losing the time that you could have spent with them. So it's a renewed pain every day. That's not just distance. Distance would be where the loved one dies, and then the person's history and life and death get further and further away. And then the feelings do fade. That is the natural thing for that to happen. Right, there's something else in front of you. The new feelings are because of something that's still with you. You're not getting further away from that. Right.
I think that it was Father Walker that you seem to... I can see that in certain cases the Torah kind of sanctions humanity, like your human feelings. And in other cases, Torah says you don't sanction your humanity. I think that's really what's bothering me. If you could do that in one place, you can't do it in another. What you would have to say to deal with it is that maybe you could always actually in some way deal with these human things in some possible way, but it wouldn't be healthy for a human being. Therefore, we'll give you certain instances where you can deal with that.
No. It's not like that. It's not like that.
How would you answer that up?
The question is upside down, so I have to turn myself upside down to try to figure out how to answer it. Suppose someone said, I have a problem, I waste time. Help me stop wasting time. So they analyze my schedule and they say, look, you don't have to spend so much time doing this, and that's really counterproductive, and you do this 4 times a week, you can get away with 2 times a week. I said, boy, that's a real help. You just saved me like 10, 12 hours a week. I say, but why aren't you working on the big problem? So they say, the big problem? I say, yeah, I must waste about close to 50 hours a week. That's a big item. So the guy says, well, where are you wasting 50 hours a week? He says, well, I sleep. He says, well, what do you mean? Why do you think it's a waste of time? Well, I'm not doing anything. I'm not reading anything. I'm not counseling students. I'm not helping my children. I'm just inert, motionless, or mostly motionless, unconscious. That's clearly all a waste of time. I said, don't be stupid. Without sleeping, you won't be able to do anything else. That's the way you're built. And from our point of view, that's the way Kodesh Baruch Hu made me. He made me to need sleep. So sleeping is what Kodesh Baruch Hu wants me to do. I am not doing anything else, that's true, but he made me so that this is natural for me, then that's what he wants me to do. And if a person says, oh, sleeping is such a waste of time, it's terrible, and I'm trapped, maybe there's some pills that I can cut it down, maybe there's an exercise I can do to cut it down, that person is rebelling against the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him to need sleep, the Rambam says 7 to 8 hours a night. And look what he accomplished. So here you don't define this as wasting time because it's built into the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to function, right? So now I say over here, the fact that I have some rules for changing emotions means that there are some requirements the Torah wants me to follow. Some of my emotions could be mistaken, and they will need help. They'll need to be addressed, and they'll have to be fixed. It doesn't follow that everything that I think is illogical is really wrong. Okay, Kodesh Baruch Hu created me with a body. And he created with a body, and the emotions are an expression of the limitedness of their body. And Kodesh Baruch Hu said, the body is part of who you are. I want you to have a body, and I want you to live with the limitations of the body. Don't rebel against having a body. And part of having a body is having emotions that respond to the present, that don't respond to the total picture. So that aspect of those emotions that are the way they are only because they're limited in time and space, that aspect is like sleep. That's where Kodesh Baruch Hu wants me to be.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that we see that there's sometimes there are emotions that we say, you shouldn't have those.
Right.
And then you can work with those.
That's right.
Right. But you can't say that across for everything.
That's right.
The only way to decide when that is what the Torah says.
Correct.
When that is.
Correct. And not to invent your own rule. Gosh, it seems to me logically it's out of touch with the total picture. So I think it's wrong. That's your own invented rule. That's not the Torah's rule. That's what I proved to you by the bracha. The Torah doesn't have any such rule. So the Torah is telling you emotions that are the way they are because they're limited in space and time. That's not enough of a reason to oppose them. And therefore, don't feel bad about them. Adarabha, have them, make brachas on them, and realize that's part of what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants you to go through.
Only when
about having those emotions?
Not having the ones that you shouldn't have, the ones that you have to fix.
Of course, like anything else, you feel you're out of whack. You're not focused correctly. You can't feel bad about having them and try to work with it.
My emotions, they don't make a difference. Then of course, why should you fix? Any emotion that makes a difference is a difference.
Here's a subtle point. You know, we have a kind of a natural bottom line. You know, is it important A or B? Let's see if it makes a difference. You do that in Gemara all the time. L'mayin afkamina, right? But you can overlook something. It could be that the emotion itself is an afkamina. And having the emotion itself is an important part of what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from a person. The Rambam says this in the 8th chapter of Shmona Prokim. He says, prophecy, to be a prophet, you have to have good midos, good character traits, even if all your actions are perfect. Even if all your actions are perfect, if your character traits are not perfect, you're not going to have prophecy. Because you could make your actions perfect without changing your character. Just make yourself very afraid. Just make yourself very afraid of being punished. I don't want to fry. So I'm washing my hands and I'm benching and I'm davening and I'm putting on tefillin and I'm not being mechal shabbos because I don't want to fry. But my mitos are terrible mitos. I'd love to get away with stealing, but of course Rob was watching the whole time. Nope, what can I do? You know, I do mitzvahs with a sigh of regret that I can't get away with it. So that, a person like that, even if all of his actions are perfect, will not get prophecy. Because character development is an independent mitzvah. It's an independent mitzvah to have high, elevated, noble character. So the emotions are part of your service of Kodesh Baruch Hu, even if they don't force you to do actions that are not appropriate.
What about which mitzvah is that? To have a character
trait? The Hidamos Elof. Was offkable. He did greatness to being similar to him. Mahu afata, mahu rachum, afata rachum. But there are many mitzvahs for emotions. Loving a Kodesh Baruch Hu, loving every fellow Jew. The samachta b'chagiacha, you're supposed to have simcha in the holidays. If there's a shem b'simcha, you're supposed to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu simcha. Umasanecha esna, those who hate God, I will hate. Right? To hate evil. There are lots of emotions that you're supposed to have. And if you don't have those emotions, then there's nothing wrong. Yeah.
So, how do you know when you're acting as a total whole person, really, that all your things are all even keel, like you're all just in the right place?
That's a tall order. I mean, there are lots of rules, and you just go rule by rule. You get a picture of the totality and say it's all working right. I think you'd have to do it with the 500 rules, you know, just like each rule. I don't know if it's a global picture, you know, it's kind of stamp on the whole thing at once. Yeah.
We see that from the fact that you can't change your emotions when addressed to you, that such a thing is possible.
Yes.
So if you say it's possible, yes, but it's not possible the whole time, and therefore these times if the Torah says...
No! It's saying it's not right to change them. Even if you could, you shouldn't.
No, there's times where you should.
But in this case...
Right, I'm saying we see that there are certain times where you should change your emotions.
Correct.
That means it's possible to change emotions.
Correct. Correct.
And we say, yes, you could do that, but if you're going to do this, you're going to be not being a whole human being. Therefore, we will tell you when to change your emotions.
No, you don't need that intermediary step of if you would do it, then therefore. Leave that out. There are rules for the emotions you're supposed to have. If you don't happen to have them, then you're breaking the rule. If you're breaking the rule, you have to try to change the emotions, make them fit the rule. And you do it rule by rule. That's all. Like any other mitzvah. I don't need, and if I would tell you more, then such and such would happen, and that's why I don't tell you more. No, I tell you what I tell you, because each rule tells you the right emotion to have under those conditions. That's all. These are the right emotions to have. It's not, I told you these, but not something else, because something else will happen, because. Leave all that out. Just subtract all that. It's sort of like saying, how come you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos? I know why, because it's too much. You know, people won't be able to take it, they won't be able to focus. So the Torah gives you, but then, really, it would be better if we could focus, you know. It would be better if we really put it on 7 days a week. No! There is no mitzvah of tefillin on Shabbos. The Torah Shlema, the perfect Torah, said 6 days a week and not 7 days a week. So 7 days, it's not a compromise that you don't put them on Shabbos. It's that they aren't appropriate for Shabbos. The mitzvah isn't there. Similarly with emotions, where it tells you that you have to have certain emotions, that's where the Torah says, this is the ideal person who has these emotions. Where it didn't tell you, it means there's no ideal to change those emotions. And if it doesn't make a bracha on them, then it's telling you it's right to have those emotions.
What if they're wrong?
They can't be wrong if the Torah allows them or approves them.
You have common sense. What if you figure out that they're wrong?
Then your common sense is wrong. If your common sense, I step with the Torah, then it's wrong.
The other things are the Torah that can be wrong or right also.
No. Values, right and wrong, good and bad, have to all come from the Torah. There can't be any values outside of Torah. Okay, ultimately, in the end, there can't be any values outside of Torah. I'm now risking contradicting something I said elsewhere in a different vocabulary, but ultimately, in the end, the Torah defines all values. Yeah. Oh, that's what I was saying. Yes, they're conditional on circumstances. That's right. What emotions to have depends very much on the circumstances that you're under.
But instead of how you could change your emotion, how would you create an emotion that you don't have?
Okay. You asked it very tricky. That's very interesting. There's a big difference between creating an emotion you don't have and getting rid of an emotion you do have. Those are two entirely different propositions. Getting rid of an emotion you do have is probably easier. It's probably easier. Well, that's only if you're getting distant, right? It's supposed to think that you're about to which you have the emotion is present in your environment. It's coming up all the time. Like, of course, cheeseburgers, right? Okay. I'm not sure about this because this is really not my field, but I believe if you don't have any root for emotion at all. That emotion just isn't part of your being. It's not part of your experience. I don't know how you would manage to graft it in. What you can do is transfer emotions or spread emotions from one area to another. And you can often do that by filling in information in the appropriate way. For example, you take a person who does things that are destructive, even vicious, and then you find out, well, I saw this once by my Rebbe, and I'll never forget it. Somebody verbally attacked my Rebbe in his own Beis Medrash in Boston. I was there, present at the time, and attacked him in a very bitter, vicious way. There were lots of people standing around. I couldn't believe it. So after a couple of minutes, I pushed myself in between the two of them, and I faced this other person, and I just pushed him out the door. I just walked into him until he was pushed out the door, and I closed the door. But I turned around and came back to the Rebbe, and I noticed that he was totally calm. Boy, if it had happened to me, one of the two of us had been on the floor. I wouldn't have been able to take that. So I said to the Rebbe, How did you manage to remain calm under that kind of provocation in your Beis Medrash, you know, and in public in front of other people? And he said to me, I will get no reward in Olam Haba for this. So he said, why? Because he said, I know this person. And I know what's going on in his home. And I know what's going on with his children. And I know what's going on with his business. And I realize that this person is just out of control. And because he's out of control, I don't take it personally. Now, imagine he starts up like that with somebody who doesn't know him. What's the person's response going to be? Hello? I can tell you from my bone experience. It'll be terrific. But then, as you fill in the information, that breaks your feelings. I was angry, and I was upset, and I was, And now I realize that this poor fellow is suffering. And he's out of control. And in a deep sense, he doesn't really mean me. He's just distraught. So I'm not going to feel the same way. So by filling in information, you can often change the feelings that you have. But that's because you naturally feel sympathy for people in pain. And now you realize that he's a person in pain. So you're pulling on those other feelings and pushing them into this slot. And that pushes out the feelings that you have. That's
changing.
Correct. No. Well, one second. I said, what did I say? I said, I don't know. I said, my feeling is to create an emotion where there's nothing, not even a root, not even a category. I don't know. I don't think you can do that. What you can do is transfer and extend emotions from one area to another. But to create a brand new emotion, you know what a psychopath is? A psychopath is a person who, so far as we can tell, does not appreciate what it means for other people to be in pain. He's holding a knife. He wants to put it down. Where should he put the knife down? He could put the knife down on the table, or he could stick the knife in a block of cheese, or he could stick the knife in a piece of meat, or he could stick the knife in your arm. Those are his options. He doesn't see any difference between the options. It just doesn't register to him. When he puts the knife in your arm, you yell and scream and bleed. Okay, it is noisy. It's noisy when people yell. And it is a little messy, but, you know, I'll put it in your clothes. It doesn't register to him what it means for other people to be in pain. The pain just doesn't register. Somehow, there's like, you know, a chunk of his brain missing, and he doesn't feel, he doesn't empathize, doesn't sympathize, just doesn't register. Now I said, okay, could I help him feel it? Could I sort of talk him into it? Could I let him read something, play some music or something? He's out of touch. That category just doesn't exist for him. So I don't know how. I believe what happens is we are born with, and naturally develop as little children, a certain range of emotions, and then it's up to us to transfer, to strengthen, to weaken. But to create a new category out of whole cloth when it's missing, I don't know what that would mean. Now, maybe I'm just limited in my understanding of emotions, but I don't know what that would mean. See, what you're really doing is, like everything else in life, when you want to get to where you're not, the way you do it is by building a bridge. You don't jump. You really can't jump. What you have to do is build a bridge. Here's where I am. So what can I do to take a step in that direction? But taking a step in that direction, you do with the mind, the balance, the muscles, the energy that you have now, and that you got from the past. So you got to build a bridge from where you are to where you want to get. Other than that, I don't know how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering, is it possible to train the mind to have one emotion instead of having another one? So instead of the conscious, you feel happy, you feel angry. Or when you feel sad, you feel happy. You should feel sad, you are happy. Is it possible to train the mind that way?
Okay, I don't know if the mind is the right word here. I don't know if the emotions are in the mind. But as I said to him, and just apply to what you're saying now, very often, ideas trigger emotions. So if you can associate an idea with that thing that triggers the emotion that you want to feel, then you can bring yourself to feel that emotion.
Even though it's not the normal emotion you want to feel.
Yeah. I mean, take people who are educationally very primitive, and if somebody does something to them, they respond with a punch in the mouth. And if you've studied some psychology, and you realize, I mean, I believe this is true, anyone who causes pain is in pain. People don't go around just hurting other people. If somebody causes pain, it's because he's suffering. A person whose life was comfortable, was happy, was satisfactory, everything was going well, he's not going to go around hurting other people. There's just no point in it then. So now, when somebody hurts me, if I remind myself of that, why is he doing this? He's doing this because he's in pain. So then, that changes my feelings. I didn't say that. What I said was, if he weren't in pain, he wouldn't do this. Maybe it's being in pain plus other things that leads him to do it, but if he weren't in pain, he wouldn't do it. So there's definitely pain there. And once I recognize there's pain, that's going to soften my response to the person. So if I pay attention to the idea, I can change the response that I have to him.
So instead of getting angry, you can...
I can feel a sense of pity, like compassion or pity for the person, and deal with them in a different way. That's right.
Well, look at the other side. Is that emotion for a guy who's in pain to cause other people pain, or as a desire?
Look, I'm not justifying it. I'm explaining it.
Is that emotional desire?
The guy himself who causes the pain? Who are you describing now?
The guy who's in pain that goes to the cause of other people's pain,
right,
because he's in pain.
Yes.
Is that an emotion because he's in pain because of the other, or is it a desire that he wants to cause other people pain because he's in pain?
It's an emotion. It's a desire. It can be a decision. It can be also all of those things.
What's the decision?
Sorry?
Oh, it's illogical. It's illogical, emotional.
No, not all decisions are illogical. We criticize decisions as illogical. What are you talking about? But it certainly can be, and I can certainly criticize him for doing it. But what am I criticizing him for? A cold-blooded, vicious crime? What I'm saying is, basically, there are no cold-blooded, vicious crimes. Every crime is performed with warm blood. Blood and pain. And because he's in pain, so he, you know, does what he does. But not, it's not just, unless you have one of these psychopaths. And they're dangerous. They're really dangerous. Because, you know, the consequences, other people just don't register with them. They register psychologically. It's not just they plan to disregard it. They don't register psychologically at all. Okay, you with me so far? So let's talk a little bit about changing emotion. Yeah.
But if he's a psychopath, I mean, that's a case where you're just not supposed to follow in terms of a psychopath, for him, even logic wouldn't apply.
That's right.
It's a sickness. So someone does have the emotion, he would be taking emotion over logic.
Someone who does have which emotion now?
Someone who feels the emotion of other people's pain.
Yes.
That would be, I'm just, for the point that he's making a judgment based on, and it's correct to make his judgment based on emotion, not on logic.
No, the relationship between emotion and logic doesn't come up here. I don't see how it's coming in. Let me give you a comparison. The psychopath is like a person who's blind. Now, I don't want him driving a motor vehicle. He's blind. He's going to smash into things, and he's going to hurt people and break things and so on, right? Because he's blind. Blind people shouldn't be doing certain things. Because he just can't, he's not in touch with the whole part of the world. A psychopath is blind. He's blind to other people's pain.
I'm just saying that the disability.
One second. So now, if I have sight, vis-a-vis the blind person, I'm better off than he is, right? Does that mean I'm disregarding logic because I use my eyes?
No.
No, there's no connection with logic here. I just have more information to go on. The guy is a psychopath. Doesn't appreciate what it means for other people to be in pain. I do appreciate what it means for other people to be in pain. Does that mean that I'm abandoning logic? It's not related to logic. Logic doesn't come in. Yeah.
Question. Your average Torah is to see emotionally extreme, or is he a psychopath?
He's not a psychopath at all. You'll watch. He will not take a pin to his brothers and sisters and stick them when other people aren't looking and laugh at their pain. A psychopath won't even do that. Just doesn't care. No, he'll be very careful if there's a pin sitting on the chair to take it off, as nobody should sit on it. They're not psychopaths at all. They understand that, indeed, part of their goal is to cause as much pain to Jews as possible. A psychopath couldn't have a goal of causing pain.
Gives him pleasure.
Sorry?
Gives him pleasure.
Certainly gives him pleasure. You can bet that if they're not drugged up, which some of them are. But as he walks up and he prepares to press the button, he's filled with pleasure. But he's going to kill Jews. So, and he understands pain very well. He just has been desperately misled by teachers and politicians who have taught him things that are... Yes. Yes, he's been conditioned in a certain way, and he's sort of, you know, we can only see one thing. They had a quote by Arafat a number of years ago to an Israeli general. He said, I can afford 30,000 shaheeds. Can you take 500 casualties? Shaheed is a suicide bomber. I can afford 30,000 shaheeds, he said. Can you take 500 casualties? Meaning you Jews are soft. If I start killing Jews, you'll cave in. You'll give up. You can't take blood. I can send 30,000 who will kill themselves. Because he's created a whole culture of hate. And a culture of martyrdom. You have little kids dressing up like martyrs. When will I be old enough to blow myself up? By the way, did you hear what happened on the road to Beitar the other day?
No.
I don't know if it made the news, but my kids live in Beit Yosef, so they know about this. They have a new type of suicide bomber. Yeah, a donkey. A donkey laden with two bombs walked up to the side of a Beitar bus and blew it and was blown up right next to the bus. Fortunately, the bus is one of these buses that are protected, and the worst that happened is some people in the bus got, suffered from shock. And nobody was physically hurt. But, you know, they laid it with two bombs, and who's going to stop a donkey? No, there's a blow of donkeys too. I'm waiting for the animal lovers in America to get upset. You know, blowing yourselves up, that's politics. But you can't blow a donkey. That's for Boston. No, we don't do that. Yeah, that's right, that's right.
So this guy's world, in this character's world, him blowing from us, the emotion matches up with the world in which he lives.
That's right. As he sees it. As he sees it, yeah.
As far as when he's conditioned, as far as the world in which he had himself immersed in, there's absolutely nothing wrong with where he's
come
on.
Come on. If you lie to people enough, you can get them to do things which for them are perfectly consistent because they're living a lie.
It takes a lot. It takes an entire community to do that to another community, doesn't it?
I think that's right. It'd be very difficult for a small minority to do that well. No, here in the textbooks and it's in the religious leaders preach it on Fridays and they sing songs about. You know when they had the thing with Sabaro 2 years ago? So there's a museum in the West Bank where they have a mock-up of the Sabaro and the blood on the walls and the whole thing, you know, people dying, because that's, and it's great success to put it in a museum.
It's actually also at the university.
Yeah, I mean, so it's also at the university. So what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a whole culture of hate. Wall Street Journal 2 years ago said Israel, what Israel has to look forward to is 50 years of war.
Who said that?
Wall Street Journal. Most realistic newspaper in the United States.
Why did they choose 50 years?
Oh, no, it was arbitrary. They said, look, you've got a whole generation of kids who've been brought up with this. You'll have to wait for the educational system to be changed and then a whole generation to die up. It's not going to happen in a hurry. It's not going to happen in a hurry. So you got two ways out. You either got the very far rightists who say, you know, drive them into the sea, or you have Sharon, who some people think is clever, who says, we should give them a state, no question. Just let them fulfill conditions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, which are impossible conditions. Like changing the textbooks and changing the whole educational system and becoming a democratic state and having it all transparent to international controls and everything else. And then we'll give them a state, Rav Hashav. But they'll never do it. They'll never do it. Okay.